This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano, or pick up bass guitar, or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Spring is here, and so are the deals at Dd's Discounts. From trendy outfits to home makeovers, Dd's has all the deals you need. I'm talking everything from sandals and sundresses to spring throw pillows and scented candles. You love a good deal? Get in your bag and get to Dd's Discounts.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, where every nail-biting overtime win, breakaway, pick six, three-point shot, underdog win, buzzer beater, shootout, walk-off, and absolutely every play in between is amazing. From football to basketball and hockey to baseball, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Illinois.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the safety top 10 countdown with our friend Kevin Ostreicher from Locked On Ravens. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. Safety, we dove into our 7 through 10. We had some guys that we really like, some guys with positional values that I think really helped the Ravens. And I think, again, as we talked about in that first part, safety is one of the most intriguing positions for me because of all the versatile positions and just ways you can move them around a defense. And we know in this Ravens defense, versatility is king, and the Ravens love to find ways to use their chess pieces.
Indeed, and they have a number of very versatile players right now. I'm of the opinion they're more specific in terms of the skill set they need right now. And it's a free safety skill set. It's a half field player that they can trust of the Geno Stone type mold if they want to go cheap in terms of getting him later in the draft. We talked about the Ravens need specifically a lot up front. So I would encourage people, the podcast may have come out on a Sunday, so it certainly came out a day earlier for the first half of this. Please go back and listen to that. You'll find that, I think, to be worth your time, and you'll catch up with this the second one, and then we'll count down number six to number one. Anything else from the first episode you thought stuck out to you?
No, I'm excited to get into the second part here, because we ended the first part with an Ohio State safety. I'm going to kick off the second part with the other Ohio State safety, which I think will be an interesting segue from one Ohio State guy to the other.
All right, let's hear it.
So at number six for me, I have Latham Ransom, who I think that profiles as a typical box safety, which, as we have talked about, is not the skill set that Baltimore does need. But the reason why I have him up a little higher than some of the other guys is because when he attacks, he can beat his blockers to spots. He's a hard hitter. And I think that he changes plays and changes drives with the way that he can tackle. Obviously, you're going to try to play him up more towards the line of scrimmage. So what would that mean for a guy like Kyle Hamilton? You know, the fact that he's able to shed his blocks so effectively. I mean, he almost looks like a linebacker there. He has that versatility and he can play at all levels. But obviously, when you're profiling him, you are going to want to have him play close to the line. Is a blitzer, I think. Zach Orr would have a field day using him up towards the line, much like they have done with guys like Kyle Hamilton, or if you want to, you know, talk about Arthur Millett, Brandon Stevens, Marlon Humphrey. He loves Zach Orr using blitzers off the edge, and I think that Latham Ransom could be a guy that does that. But obviously, when you talk about that, the coverage skills aren't necessarily where you'd want them to be in terms of what Baltimore's need actually is. Plus, the injury history does have some concerns. He has the leg thing back a couple of years ago. Lisfranc, which we obviously know can be hard, but that was back in 2023. So does that give any indication of, does he play too physical? Because he already is a very physical player. Is that going to have any impact? He also sometimes has his whiffs because of his aggressive style of tackling, but I just think the coverage skills for him, I would love to put him higher, but I think with the limitations that he has in coverage, the ball production not really there as well. Can't really track the ball as well as I would like. I understand why you flipped him, Ken. I totally see your reasoning there. I just think for me, the talent that Ransom has, I love what he brings to the table as a box safety. So I didn't want to factor in too much of like, oh, I'm just going to put him all the way down because the Ravens don't need a player like that. I think he's still very talented. But am I expecting the Ravens to take him? Probably not.
Okay, so Ransom is a guy that, first of all, he's an ideal central casting kind of fit at safety. 6'0", 206, exactly what you want in terms of size. 453 speed. It was an other measurement, so we look at that with some questions. But perfectly good size. His pro day testing is all average across the board. That's okay. I mean, it comes down to instincts in a lot of ways. On the key metrics, he fell down on both of them. So stops to missed tackle ratio was 1.8 to 1 last year, 25 to 14. Career, it's only 63 to 46, like 1.5 to 1, actually less than 1.5 to 1. And the problem is the denominator there, a 16.7% missed tackle rate. Now, we talked about Sebastian Castro in the first episode. He's a guy with a 16% missed tackle rate career, but he managed to have still a very reasonable, like 2.5 to 1 or so career stops to missed tackle rate. That's not the case with Latham Ransom. His missed tackles have kind of dominated what he's done at the college level. In fact, he's never been under a 15.2% missed tackle rate in any season. If you're looking at coverage, also a problem. Yards per target last year at 9.2, 95.4 opposition passer rating, career 8.0, better, but 93.9 opposition passer rating. That's just not exciting for a draftable safety, certainly not at the top of the draft. What is exciting about it is some of the ancillary ball skills. So he has 6 career forced fumbles, including 3 in 2024, 3 career interceptions. That's a little contribution. But between the two, you have a guy who's producing some turnovers, I think. Also blocked 2 punts in 2022. So that's a nice little bonus for your punt coverage team, your punt return team, I should say. So that's nice. He had 16 total passes defensed in 1,387 college snaps. It's not exactly what you would want, certainly. He was only asked to rush the passer 3% of the time, so it's not like he wasn't playing back to front for a lot of his college career. Sure. He split the single high role with Hancock. Very interesting that last year, Hancock, as the college football playoffs are beginning, as the second half is rolling around, took over the higher percentage of that single high role, and they had Ransom playing close to the line of scrimmage more. That's much more along what the division of what their strengths are, and that's why I had Hancock higher. Ransom, it's hard for me to say exactly where he is, but here's how I denoted it in my list. For me, he's the 12th best safety in this draft for the Ravens fit. I don't mind if they spend a 6 or a 7 on him, but anything higher I'd be kind of upset with. And a lot of people have been profiling this a day 2 pick. I mean, they're guys who I think PFF had him in the 90s for where they think he'll be drafted. That's absurdly too high for what the Ravens need. Sure. And what his skill set is. And I don't care what kind of safety you're looking for. I don't think that Ransom is good enough to be drafted at number 94. They have him at. So
yeah. He's someone I would profile as a day 3 guy. I mean, I would have him at the very earliest, probably mid 4th round, 5th round. I mean, Baltimore, again, doesn't need to have a guy like that, and they already have enough of that. Like, you want more of the ball production. I think that Ransom doesn't give you that compared to some of the other guys, but the role that he does play, he can be very good at, especially for a team that does need someone that can play more down in the box and have the ability to just be a heat-seeking missile in there. But we know that the Ravens already have that guy, and where would the role be if they did draft a guy like this, or just a skill set like this? So the reason I had him up high, or at least higher, was because of the fact that he's very, very good at what he does. But I think he's a very scheme-specific and skill-specific player that I just think is going to be boxed into that up closer to the line, which he can play back deep, but I'm not really going to experiment with that a ton if I'm an NFL team.
All right. Well, fair enough. Well, my number 6 guy we talked about in the first episode, I'll just review briefly what I think was Billy Bowman of Oklahoma. Ton of ball skills. Big missed tackle problem. He's kind of about as extreme as you can get. Frankly, about as extreme as Geno Stone can be at his worst. Is a guy who has all kinds of tackling problems, but knows certifiably how to play a loose bracket, go get the football, and makes big plays. But I liked him a lot. I think he fits exactly what the Ravens need. But we talked about it on the first show. Go back and listen to that if you want more detail. I guess we're moving to the top 5 now, and I'm guessing from the list, and this is often the way it works out, is we don't have a difference in the top 5 because I think I would have heard all of these names by now if you're in this one guy who might be different in this top 5. But tell me who your number 5 guy is.
All right, I'm excited to dive into this. Number 5, I have Andrew Mukuba out of Texas. So he's a guy that, to me, I think can fit in with what the Ravens want to do. He's someone that, you know, his athleticism, he's kind of an explosive athlete is kind of how I determine it. He has the speed. He's very good at changing direction. You know, the way that he processes stuff, particularly while in zone, he jumps underneath routes very effectively. I just think he has a very high football IQ. He has ball skills as well. He's versatile. You can play him deep. If you want, you can put him in the box, or slot is sometimes where you can put him as well. I think that's something that the Ravens could experiment with if they wanted to. In terms of playing the run lanes, he doesn't show a lot of hesitation playing downhill. He brings effort. And the fact with him, and a lot of people are going to look at this as a weakness, and I do too, the frame is tough. He's about 190. That's a liability, especially when we've talked about guys getting washed out in the run game. He's another player that, you know, even when you look at games like Arkansas, you know, playing against them, they have a very power scheme, and he was washed out in that game a lot. The over-aggressiveness jumps out with a lot of these players in this class, and I think that's just obviously not being as refined in that area, but I think that there's an ability for him to do that. The leverage, he can sometimes lose that. He tries to go for the splash play a lot, which can be great. Obviously, he has great returns, but other times it can be far too much of a risk. So I think that he can be a dynamic player at the NFL level, and someone that I think with the athleticism that he has, Baltimore could utilize in a lot of different ways. But again, when you look at him, 5'11", right around that 185, 190 frame, does Baltimore want to take on another player like that, or do they want to go a little bit bigger in the size department?
All right. So you said an interesting thing there about, can sometimes be over aggressive and that can get him into trouble and whatnot. We heard that said about Ed Reed for years.
Yeah,
and sure. Or Marcus Peters, for example, a guy who certifiably knew how to gamble well. He was a card counters cornerback, if ever there was one, in terms of knowing when to make good gambles. Andrew Mukuba is that guy, and his really shows up in the coverage metrics, which are about the best in the entire class. 3.2 yards per target. And 12.1 opposition pass rate. 12.1, that's one third of the rating. 39.6 is throw every ball into the ground. So 12.1 is literally amazing. He had 5 interceptions last year. I think he allowed 0 touchdowns last year as well. But career, he's not as good. 7.8 yards per target and 83.4, which is still very good in terms of the passer rating. But the one of the points about Makube is that he's improved every year in terms of very steady growth in his coverage skills. And yeah, he has 5 interceptions, no touchdowns. I have it here. And is now ball skills are among the best in the safety class. Yeah. He's one of 4 guys who really has the ball skills that I want. And you've got Emenwori, who I'm sure we'll be talking about as we move on here. You've got Watts, Makuba, and Bowman. Those are the 4 guys who really have the ball skills necessary to reverse the Ravens' turnover problems at safety for being not as good as they need to be. So I'm sure we'll be talking about some of the remainder of those guys. Other than that, he has had a big problem with tackles. His stops to miss tackle ratio is only 23 to 13 last year, 56 to 32 career, less than 2-1, not good. A 12.8% miss tackle rate is not actually otherworldly terrible. We talked about, you know, some other players who, you know, have reputations as good tacklers not being nearly as good, including Ransom, right?
Right.
So, you know, he's a pure free safety in college, in the NFL. His ball skills need to be maximized. His tackling difficulties need to be minimized. He's only rushed the passer 7 times in his entire college career. Very natural, loose bracket player. Really plays for the overthrow. Doesn't crowd or guided missile to the midsection trying to dislodge the football. He's tried to do more than that. He wants that ball each time. Kind of another guy who's a twister and slides off tackles. I mentioned that for, I think it was Malachi Moore earlier on, had some problems with tackling. But Makuba also a guy who kind of, he's a natural instinct is to twist the guy down instead of trying to stick the guy and stand him straight up. And when he does that, he slips off and misses sometimes. He'll fit the Ravens very well as a split field player. And Makuba I had at number 4, I believe. So it's a very crowded list here at the top. Yeah. But he's number 4 for me.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I would not be mad if Baltimore spent a later day 2 pick on him. I feel like he's someone that the Ravens could utilize.
What round? What's your maximum pain threshold?
Like for, in terms of how early I would take him?
Yeah.
I would probably, if they wanted to trade up in the 3rd round a little bit, I'd be okay with that. Second round is probably reaching a little bit. I would probably say round 3, early round 4 is probably my sweet spot.
Yeah, I love him at 91 for the Ravens, yeah. By the way. I think he'd be a perfect fit there. If they got him in round 4 somehow, enormous value. There have been a lot of teams that would have missed somehow for that to happen, because I don't forget where the Ravens pick exactly, but somewhere in the middle of the 4th round, 115, 120-ish range. And that would be too late for him in my book.
Yeah, he'll be gone by then, I think.
I guess we move on to my number 5 guy. And my number 5 guy is Kevin Winston of Penn State. Let me get down my notes on him here. 6'2", 215. So, again, central casting. Looks like Superman sometimes compared to the other safeties in terms of his size. He's been hurt, been off the field for a long time now. Had a knee injury that ended his season on the 2nd week of the season, I believe. Had his surgery on 10-1. And he's been basically having to spin it ever since in all the interviews he's done, talking about how close he is to being ready, and you know, he's ready for the start of camp, he's ready for this, but he hasn't been able to do any testing or anything. Reportedly ran a 4:50 at his pro day. I would want to inspect that very closely. To say that I don't believe it is not going too far at all. So I think that it's a oddball number thrown in, you know, talking about where he is in terms of recovery. 32.5-inch arms, very long for the position. He'll be 22 in December, so he's still on the younger side. That was one of the questions, by the way. He's played 3 years at Penn State. Still has a year of eligibility. In fact, he might have 2, but he just, because he could have gotten a medical red shirt or whatever, and he decided to go to the NFL anyway. I think one of the things is you know, from a size and shape player, he's a very rare size, even though he's the 2nd biggest safety in this draft, as it turns out, but unusual. Stops to miss tackle ratio. This is where he's amazing. He had in 2023, now he only played 70 snaps in 2024, so I don't have any meaningful numbers, but in 23, 21 stops and 0 missed tackles. Career, 25 stops. Those are defensive wins where he knocks a player short of what will keep you up with the sticks. 25 defensive wins and 2 missed tackles, a 2.2% career missed tackle rate for his career. So just ridiculously good. You look at his yards per target numbers, 6.1 yards per target and 81.5 OPR. That's in 23. Career, 7.1, 89.3. Nothing wrong with those numbers. They're not, they don't shine out completely over the top of the field, but the most recent information being the most pertinent, he's good in that regard. He had one interception, five PDs, and zero penalties in 380 college coverage snaps. That's not a lot of total college coverage snaps, by the way. Another reason why it might have made a lot of sense for this guy to play another year of college ball.
Yeah.
But it is solid ball production for 380 snaps. He was in line. I think he's one of the guys, if he hadn't been hurt, would have been in line for a first-round draft consideration. He's that good. And now it really the big thing is the injury flag. I don't think it's 100% clear that he'll be a free safety in the NFL. Now, part of that comes to the fact that other teams are going to love his size and speed combination and want to use him as their version of Kyle Hamilton. Move him all over the field. He's big enough to make plays in the line of scrimmage, take away the strong side, use him as a dime back, whatever they want to do. He can do all those things. But if other teams see somebody who's not limited in some way that the Ravens covet as a free safety half field player, then the Ravens will never get him cheaply for that free safety half field skill, which is what they really need. So in terms of draft economy, he probably won't end up being a great pick for the Ravens. Great downhill player. He hasn't yet to determine all that much in the way ball skills, kind of got into that a little bit. The biggest thing is the David Ajabo risk that I have to read between the lines of everything I've seen him say in interviews and see, this guy is not going to play this year. Or if he plays, he'll cost you a year of his first four in doing it. And so I really hate losing a developmental year, and I really hate losing a year of actual play from players. So with Voorhees, you kind of lost the developmental year in a lot of ways, maybe not in terms of his head, but in terms of his body in a lot of ways as he was rehabbing. But you didn't lose the year of play because you NFI'd him for the whole year, and you have him still for 4 years. In the case of Winston, they would lose a year probably of any meaningful on-field production. So they need it more than any other player. They need to check out the medicals on a Kevin Winston before they draft him. I think other teams are probably, there'll be some other team who loves him too much for his size and shape and speed that will draft him higher anyway. So I really like the guy. I think he's a value to the Ravens in round four, and I think he'll be gone probably before then.
Yeah. I think he's day two in, you know, whether a team falls in love with him late second, early third, I could even see that being as early as he goes. But I don't think you mentioned it. That's not the value that the Ravens need at this point for that position. And the NFL readiness question is real. The injury question is real. Those are all things you have to factor into it. But he's such a good – I mean, you listed it all off. The fact that he's able to be such an elite run defender and diagnose plays – I've seen a bunch of scouting reports and I agree with it. It's essentially, he plays with that controlled violence. Like, you know, he's that like collision highlight real guy. You're going to see him five times in the span of 25 plays. Cause that's what he brings. He's able to get off of blockers. He has the length and the frame, you know, he has the instincts in zone as well. Kind of like the intermediate area of the field is that sweet spot for him. But I feel like, to me, Baltimore needs a guy that can be more immediate in the contribution department. And if you're going to lose that year, I don't know if they're either are burned from the Ajabo situation and say, hey, we don't want to do this again with a day two pick, if that's where a team has to be to take them, because I think in round four, fine. But you know, if you're spending your second round pick on him, I don't think that's a great way to use your asset.
Yeah. I don't think there's any way the Ravens would use the second round pick, but I it wouldn't shock me if some other team drafts him late second, early third, as you mentioned. It's just, it's one other thing about this. This penalty occurred while playing football. I don't know what the rules are in terms of NFIing this injury, but I think if you draft him, then you, and the injury occurred, you know, during the season, then I think he can't, there's not the possibility of NFIing him. There is, if it happens after the season, even when he's training. In the case of Ajabo, it happened on his pro day and they still had the right to NFI him, even though they didn't keep him on NFI the entire season. In the case of Voorhees, he actually got injured at the combine. Not during the bench. He actually did the bench after that when he had the 38 reps. But I don't believe they have the right to NFI Winston because it happened during the football season. At least that's my understanding. And so since that option doesn't exist, I don't know. If I were Winston's agent, it's hard to improve on something when you're kind of batting 1,000 at everything you've ever done in your college career. He's never been penalized. He's never missed a tackle. You know, basically he said 2.2% missed tackle rate. It's hard to improve on that. So it's hard to say, go play another season. Cause you know, you need to remove this injury flag and show you can still play again.
Right.
It's a very hard decision, but on the other hand, I think he cost himself some first round money by coming out this year. Maybe he makes it up by getting to his second contract a little quicker.
Yeah, that's the hope. I mean, I was even, you know, he could have maybe done some NIL thing and, you know, had another year of college.
But, good point.
You know, look, I guess this is a dream. I don't blame him for doing it. Like, obviously, you want to get to the NFL. You want to achieve your dream. And, you know, congratulations, he's going to do it. But I think if he can get rid of that injury concern and he gets healthy, he plays those potential teams getting a first round talent, probably in the second or third round.
Yeah. Yeah, he certainly had the propensity to go higher. Where did you have Winston, by the way?
I had number four.
He was number four. Okay, so we've been over both our number four picks. We just had a flip-flop on five and four with Bakuba and Winston for the two of us here. So we'll move on to your number three pick.
My number three is going to be Xavier Watts, Notre Dame. So the South Bend guy. I think he's one of the more unique stories we've seen in a while. Obviously, the offensive prowess. I mean, he came onto the scene as an offensive guy. He was a wide receiver and then moves over to defensive back. And the journey that he's had is unbelievable. And I think part of what makes him so good, to me at least, is the fact that because of his offensive background, he's able to recognize plays. There have been multiple times, you know, he just jumps off of film, being able to even jump routes before the quarterback can process his reads and go through where he wants to throw the football. It's unbelievable. The burst that he has, even closing on the football, closing in on routes, free flowing towards the either the ball carrier or just before the ball is thrown, he arrives at the mesh point. I mean, he knows how to time up things, which is a really important skill to have, especially for a young player. The ball skills are elite. He's able to do a lot of mental processing too. So he plays chess. Talk about chess pieces. But he's a guy that plays chess with the quarterbacks. You know, it's almost like what, you know, Bill Belichick can't stop raving about Ed Reed for all the chess that he played with him and Tom Brady back during those Ravens and Patriots days. You know, I'm not saying Xavier Watts is the second coming of Ed Reed, but he certainly has incredible ball skills. He's versatile. I think that for him, some of the tackling does need refinement, but it's not, you know, horrendous. I think part of it is just he relies on momentum a lot of the time, and sometimes the form can slip when you're doing that, which is natural. But again, that's something that you can work on. But I think that he's going to be an immediate impact player wherever he goes. He fits the skill set that Baltimore needs. I think it'd be a home run pick if they can get him in the second. Maybe they'd have to get him in the first. I feel like he's a guy that will maybe be gone by the time the Ravens pick at their pick in the second round. So maybe that is, they have to trade back and take them. Maybe that's a route that they go. That could be an option, but I think that his ideal sweet spot is probably early to mid second round. So if that means a trade back scenario for Baltimore or just taking him at 27 outright, that could be an option, but he is an exceptional player.
Yeah. Outstanding player. 6.02 beats the standard right there. 4.56 at his pro day is a tick slow, but it's all about processing with Watts, and his instincts are so good. His processing is so good. He gets there on time. Age is a concern. He'll be 24 in November. That was also a concern for Ed Reed, folks. Ed Reed was going to be 24 when he was drafted. So it can work out. He has very good size. The source of the testing is an issue, of course. 31.25-inch arms are fine. Then you get into some of the other specific metrics. His stops to missed tackle ratio is about 1.8-1, which in 2024 was not particularly great. Career, almost 2-1, 13.5% missed tackle rate for his career. That's as much as I have bad to say about Xavier Watts. Everything else is positive. Yeah. So we'll start with this. His yards per target and OPR, 5.6 yards per target this last year, 6.7 career, both outstanding. 30.1 opposition passer rating, below the 39.6, you know, all incomplete level. And one of the reasons for that is the last two seasons, he's had 13 interceptions and allowed zero touchdowns, which is the probably the most incredible single statistical line for a defensive back I've ever seen over a two-year period. I mean, just that's ridiculous. I mean, it's he had 14 other PDs in that year. And, you know, also he looks like the Lord of the Nazgul back there to every quarterback. So they don't even want to throw it there. And yet they're doing it. Some of that is some of the baiting that you mentioned, which Ed Reed was certainly the master of, that he knew how to take a false step to then make a true step. That's the real key for baiting the quarterback, or even pretending to be a little slow and then knowing exactly how to time up the undercut of a route, like we saw in Ed Reed's big return against the Eagles, is just complete bait play on who was the quarterback then?
Kevin Cobb?
I think that's right. I think it's Cobb. K-O-L-B, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, Reed's a quarterback very effectively. Missed tackle rate on the high side. One of the things about being the former receiver that I think is important is that he goes up at the catch point and has a very good idea of how to bring the football down without the other guy getting it.
Yeah.
Defensive backs don't always have the opportunity to display that skills. Wide receivers practice it all the time of, you know, how do I get it? And even when you go to Ravens camp, you'll see they have this, oh, I'm trying so hard to get the ball away from you kind of thing from the defensive backs they play, where they don't really in the end try and take the ball away from them, but they try and, you know, show up at least to make it somewhat difficult for the receiver. The absolute triumphs of instincts over athleticism. There is another player who goes the other direction in this draft, but there's no element of his measurements or testing that stands out. It's definitely in that, in those instincts. I think he's the most complete pure free safety in this draft. There's no doubt about it in my mind. Not out of the question that they would take him at number 27. It's not the kind of pick I'd say, oh no, and start pearl clutching over.
Sure.
Like I've been very upset with past picks at Patrick Queen in particular. People remember the way I blew up at that pick. This would not be that kind of pick. I think it'd be a slight reach, but I think it's exactly a need pick and a still a potentially very high value player. At that point, I think he would be completely at the intersection of need and value streets if he was taken at number 59. And I don't think they'll have the good fortune that it'll last that long. So I'm with you. I think the trading back option, one of the players I tried to be trying to get if I traded back, would be to see if Xavier Watts fit into that as at least as one of the guys I might get if I were trading back, say, eight slots or something to number 35, maybe even to number 40. Does it still figure that Xavier Watts is one of the guys you can get?
Yeah, I think that would be one of the ideal. And I mean, even when you talk about the Patrick Queen pick, there were, you know, the other option. I think everyone was gone at that point. You could have traded back to 33 and taken T. Higgins at the first part, or just taken T. Higgins right there, and it would have been...
I'll tell you, the player I wanted was another safety. It was Xavier McKinney, and he's turned out to be one of the best safeties in the entire game. Now it's just this the loss of those two safeties, the him and James, in 2 years apart. And I'm sorry, wait a minute, 2 years apart, 4 years apart in the draft.
4 years, yeah.
very frustrating. In terms of no, wait, it was 2 years apart.
It was two because it wasn't
2020.
Yeah, Durbin was 2018, and McKinney. Right.
Yeah. So anyway, I had Starks at number two, still not number one on my board, amazingly, despite being a perfect fit for what the Ravens need.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the Ravens had the good fortune, as you called it, of one Notre Dame safety falling into the laps at 14. I'm not sure they'll get it twice in a row with Watts falling all the way down to their pick in the second
59,
round.
Yeah.
So they'll have, I think that they will have the option to take him at 27. I'm not sure a team will take him before then, especially with the two other safeties we're going to talk about here.
Yeah.
But if they get taken earlier than expected, maybe a team does want to take Watts towards the end of that first round, get the fifth year option, which is valuable, despite the fact that it has now changed a little bit and how they do it compared to years prior. I just think Watts is somebody that like you can take and feel good about playing him in a big role during his rookie season, especially with where Baltimore needs him on the field.
Okay. I'm not sure if I misspoke and said the other guy's name next, but the other, I might.
You said Starks was your two. So is that.
No, Starks is actually my three. And so is my two. Watts is my two guy. So Starks is my three. I guess I'm next, right? Because you had three.
You're going now. Yeah, because Watts is my three.
Okay. So I have Malachi Starks there of Georgia. 6'1", 192, 450. Nice long arms at 31 5/8, 22 in November. He's got a cornerback's frame. He's very fast, but he's interesting because he's got really lousy testing in some of the other movement skills, the shuttle, the vertical, and the three cone. He's no higher than the 19th percentile in any of those three, which is very unusual.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Spring is here, and so are the deals at dd's Discounts. From trendy outfits to home makeovers, dd's has all the deals you need. I'm talking everything from sandals and sundresses to spring throw pillows and scented candles. You love a good deal? Get in your bag and get to dd's Discounts.
What makes for a great vacation depends on who you ask. Are you looking to get away or bring everyone together? Do you want to get outside and play or see a play at the plate? Fortunately, however you operate, I'm the destination you've been looking for. The name's Missouri, but you can call me Mo. And I have just one question. What's your MO? Come see me at visitmo.com.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
It definitely wouldn't be a slot corner with those kind of things, but he's more of a processing guy playing from the back end. He didn't have a very good year in 2024, and that's one of the reasons why he'd be lower. I know he's absurdly high on some boards. PFF has him in their top 10. Yeah. Just watching the guy play some and looking at the tight ends now and seeing fairly average tight ends run right over him is a problem, even though his missed tackle rate is one of the reasons to love him. His stops to missed tackle ratio is 2.6 to 1 this last year at 18 to 7. That's good. It's not great. It's good. His career is 4 to 15, which is almost 3 to 1. That is very good. Only a 6.9% missed tackle rate for his career. That's one of the reasons you really love him. Okay. Now we get to the coverage side of the ball. And Malachi Starks is supposed to be a guy who can play a lot of single high safety, give up 8.9 yards per target and a 99.6 opposition passer rating this last year. Career, it's 8.7, a little better, and 92.6. Not up there where you want your top back end guy to be. You need him to be a better player, both in terms of yards per target, really reducing the catch percentage. You know, one of the things you get if you have a really top ball hockey safety that the opposing quarterbacks fear like none other is that they'll overthrow the ball. The interceptions mean so much to them and their future. They don't want to have any part of throwing you. So they'll immediately overthrow everybody and say, oh, well, yeah, boy, I threw it where only my guy could get it. And really nobody could ever get it. In Malachi Starks' case, I don't get the sense that opposing quarterbacks feared him in that way. And in particular, he had a terrible game against Texas. If you want to look at that game, see a team take advantage of him. He had 8 targets in that game. I gave up 136 yards, 80 yak he allowed in that game. He lost more on a slant rub. And then he was beaten outside by Golden, or he took a very bad angle there. So, you know, there's a couple NFL caliber players who are, you know, going to be the kind of guys he faces on Sunday. I mentioned I'm looking at who's the guy I'm looking at right now at tight end. It's a big, thick, lower bodied guy played at Georgia. Dupree.
Oh,
Dupree. So anyway, he runs right over him. I mean, I'm sorry, that's Georgia. He plays at Georgia. It's not Dupree. It's it'll come to me. I'm sorry. It'll come to me. But anyway, he gets run over just way too much for who he is and what his missed tackle rate is. I think he's a project. If you want to move him to a free safety role in the NFL, probably, you know, people are looking for a Kyle Hamilton, like play all over the place, do whatever you need. It's not like he's rushed the quarterback a ton in his career. But that may be where he goes. I'm going to say this. My reaction, if he goes in the top 26 picks, is going to be, and not to the Ravens trading up, because I really hope that doesn't happen, is going to be phew, because it's going to be a player, a pick gone to a player I don't really think fits the Ravens. So love for the Ravens to get him at 59. That's completely unrealistic. But, you know, and it's not like he's the terrible player that I wouldn't want on the team under any circumstances. But my round for him is round 2. And I think a lot of other teams are going to have a round 1 grade on him.
Yeah. And to me, I think that it's going to rely on, you know, he's a very scheme specific guy. And in terms of some of the size concerns and kind of what you need as a safety to be able to go against some of these bigger and more elite tight ends the game has to offer at the NFL level these days, the frame doesn't give you a lot of room for optimism. I do love, though, the fact that, you know, his one run defense, he's great in that area. He does have the speed, although I know the testing numbers they deter from what a lot of people say about his speed. But I think the instincts are really good from him. The football IQ, I mean, even just in terms of being able to lead defense, he's really good in pre-snap communication, getting everybody in the right position. He got the Georgia secondary aligned properly, it seemed like, on almost every single play. And I mean, this has been a ascension from him, but he was good from the jump. I mean, even his freshman year, I mean, he had consistent production across the board throughout his time at Georgia. So I think that he's somebody that would fit the Ravens. I would be fine with them taking him at 27. I know the guy that we're going to talk about next is the do-it-all freak of nature, crazy combine guy that I think everybody now has leaped Malachi Starks in terms of who the number one safety is. But I would not be mad if the Ravens did take Malachi Starks at number 27.
27? Oh,
for me, he is my number 2. But I wouldn't like love it. But I also think he's going to be, I think you will have your few moment, because I think that he will go before 27.
I seriously hope you are correct. And I hope he goes over the guy we both have apparently at number 1 here, because where did you have Starks then at number two?
Number two.
Okay. And so we had Watson Starks flipped at 2-3 for you and me both. And then we have the same guy at number 1. Go talk about Nick Amonwari.
I don't even know where to begin. I mean, I think everybody kind of had him as this up and coming guy. And then I think the combine obviously sent shockwaves through how people value him, obviously for his size, the speed that he ran. It's unbelievable. He's someone that pops up on the film. He does so much. He has the size and speed combo. Again, he has that linebacker size frame, but the speed that he runs at with that frame, I don't know how offensive coordinators will be able to deal with it. Obviously, people, they want their Kyle Hamilton. Ken, you talked about that throughout the show. Mm-hmm. If you want your Kyle Hamilton, I think that this is probably as close as you get with a guy that gives you the skill set with the size that Hamilton has and the ability. I think Eamon Ware would be that guy for you, Nick Eamon Ware here. I think in the run game, he's a guy that will thump you. He plays with bad intentions. And talking about coverage, I mean, he recognizes routes really well in man coverage. I mean, he can match up with tight ends. And again, that's where that frame and his length, he uses that to his advantage. He processes really well. I mean, you can tell on the film that he finds something out. He diagnoses things very quickly and he gets to his spot. The ball skills for the player of his caliber and the size that he has the hands, which I really like. He's really good in the air as well. He's not flailing around in the air. He has really good body control, especially when going up for jump balls with guys. He also, this is really intriguing to me, some teams are going to play him on special teams. I think he has the ability as a special teamer. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if they're going to do that if the Ravens do take him. But look, I mean, he has the size. He has the speed, his tackling ability. He can be a guy that plays on all four downs for you, and it's really not even close. He can get over-aggressive sometimes, but again, I'm not docking guys a lot for that at this point. To me, I think that he relies on his physical gifts a lot, as he should, but I think as his technique refines over the course of his career, he's only going to get better. To me, I think that this is a no-brainer for a lot of teams. I think he'll be gone far before 27, which is unfortunate, but I think that his combine solidified him as the top safety in this class, and it's really not close.
Okay, I'll have a hypothetical question for you at the end of this. Remind me to ask you the hypothetical if I somehow forget. Okay, so you covered a lot of the important stuff. Obviously, in terms of central casting, frame and size and everything, he's maybe the best ever safety in terms of the combination of size, speed, arm length, all of the measurables you would want. Kyle Hamilton was fantastic in his own right. He wasn't nearly as fast as and isn't right. nearly as fast yeah. as Eamon Ware. He has great instincts to more than make up for that. If you go to the stops to missed tackle ratio, he's improving at a 9.7% missed tackle rate for his career, but that's improving. Last year, 2.7-1 stops to missed tackle ratio, which is good. Career, it's only a little bit below 2-1 at 56-29. So he has already shown some improvement. He's also very young. He turned 21 in February. So he's a guy you're looking at to be a cornerstone player. Obviously, he's a first-round draft pick, so you really are looking at him to be a cornerstone player. But there's no reason why he would deter you from that. There's no off-ramp that would be obvious from that the way there was with a Hayden Hurst, say, when you draft him and he's 25 years old or whatever the hell Hayden Hurst was, that it's not likely he's going to play that second contract with you. Here's one of the good things also. He is so good right now as an athlete being what he was, and his numbers and coverage really, really tell you this, that I still see tons of room for improvement. And having that is so exciting in a player like this that, is a big physical ball of clay right now that could be molded by hopefully, a great couple of secondary coaches and defensive coaches in general with the Ravens. Harbaugh has a defensive backs background as well. You have Pagano in this year. You have Ware to hope, find a role for him within the defense. So I think there are a lot of ways in which he would be a huge help for the Ravens. His yards per target this last year, 5.3, opposition passer rating of 37.1. Again, better than the every pass incomplete basis. Career, 6.9 yards per target, 79.3 passer rating, both good, but he's shown so much improvement in every area. This last year at South Carolina just had a terrific year. He did have 5 penalties in 2024. That's something that needs to be improved. It's also something I think can be improved. And it'll be improved more naturally by him playing a pure free safety role, as opposed to he goes wherever on the field the team wants him to be, a Kyle Hamilton and whatnot. And this is interesting because I think if the Ravens have both of these players, first of all, unbelievable pair of weapons at safety. But if you have both of those players on the field, Eamon Ware is the obvious guy you keep on the back end.
Yeah,
as ridiculous as that might be, given he's 6'3", 220, But he's obviously the guy keeping the back end. Hamilton has a you know, prodigious track record of taking away the strong side of the field. And if you're talking about versatility, both of the guys have it. And this is good versatility where both of them can play free safety. It's not this BS. I've got two strong safeties, no free safety. And so I'm going to say my guys are versatile. And you heard me get upset about that a lot. So I won't continue. More than that, Emenwori, in terms of his coachability, I think has the propensity to be very good in that area. He's a team captain and is on the SEC academic honor roll. So right there, you know, I know it's an NIL league now in the SEC. Every player who's playing football is there to play football first and to go academically second. When you have a guy who can do both, we've had Jeremy Lucien on this show a number of times. He's a guy who got an engineering degree while he was, you know, working his way through trying to make the NFL. He's a guy who, Emenwori is a guy who I think will be able to pick up the playbook very quickly and be good at that. Very natural leader. He won't have any problem handling that part from the back end, even if Hamilton's up front and is not the guy who's moving people around. I expect Emenwori will be a guy very quickly, maybe his second or his third year, who will be doing most of the emoting on the field. And how he does that will be one of the big keys in terms of how well he does as a leader in the league. Some people can do it very well. Some people lead by borderline abuse. And I don't mean this in a bad way, but I think Marlon Humphrey is kind of close to that. He cocks his head in a way when he's upset with a player on the field. He really lets the other player know in a very demonstrative way when he's upset with them. Kyle Hamilton is probably better. Kyle Van Noy, outstanding on-field leader. If you go look back a few years, inside linebacker, weak side, wore number 58, came in 2019. Who was the guy? Came for the Steelers. He played with the Steelers and the Eagles previously for a long
time. LJ Fort.
Yeah. Outstanding on field demeanor in terms of how he would tell Patrick Queen that he was messing up, which was happening a lot, and he had to do it a lot. So that was nice to have. But I think Emenwori will be that sort of leader. He's ideal when he's diagnosing and bracketing the play. He does have a tendency to be a go directly to the midsection player. He's a huge player, likes to be physical, but he's also a player who needs to go after the football. He's got the size to contest the ball way above most wide receivers, catch point, and he should be doing that as an NFL player. Hamilton also provides another value to the Ravens as an underneath zone defender that he's so hulking, particularly with his very long arms, that he's a hard guy to throw the ball over. And quarterbacks a lot of times just don't want to do it. They don't want to take the risk. And, you know, Hamilton has shown, in particular the interception return for the pick six against Cleveland, Deshaun Watson, when he went on the quick out to Njoku, they totally baited him into the play. He comes from 3 yards off the line of scrimmage, knew exactly what the azimuth of that football was going to be, went up, tipped it. And you know, he's in the end zone, like kind of giving a duck walk or something in before the defense can react at all. That's the kind of size Emenwori also brings to the table. So if they want him to play an under the zone defender, or they want to have him even rushing the passer, they can certainly do. But if they want Hamilton to rush the passer and him to take some sort of short role, that's fine as well. There's a lot he can bring to you that is different and relatively unique in the NFL. Obviously, Hamilton is also bringing it. And I just love the notion of these two guys playing together in the same secondary. Tremendously versatile. And both equally adept at playing the back end and being used as playmakers closer to the line of scrimmage. Just think it'd be a very exciting pairing. And he's far and away my number one guy. First of all, let's hear your thoughts on Emenwori.
Yeah, he's one of the guys that I would move heaven and earth for if I were the Ravens, within reason to trade up for.
My hypothetical will include those heaven and earth being moved, but go ahead.
I might even throw 2026 draft compensation. I mean, we know they're not going to trade their first away next year. They're not going to do it. I mean, I would, if it took 27, a third this year.
I'll give you a hypothetical to talk about Emenwori first, if you would.
Okay. Well, I think for me, the fact of one, you have Hamilton and Emenwori together, that would be a devastating combo for like that would keep me up at night if I was an offensive coordinator, because of the fact that, again, Emenwori does so many good things one, being able to set that tone physically to energize the defense, plus with the speed and the size that he has. And I agree with you. We're like, yes, you talk about, well, that's a guy that should be playing up in the box for his career. But if you have him in Hamilton, you keep him on the back end. You let Hamilton play up towards the line. And it still is as devastating, I think, as it would be if you had him and Worry up there just by himself. I think that he fits exactly what the Ravens need. Obviously, he's not going to be this guy that is going to come in and, you know, be a player that with, in terms of refinement in certain areas, you mentioned it. There are areas where he can grow in, such as the zone coverage. Sometimes he can lose track of guys because he's trying to read the quarterback's eyes. Like, that's something I noticed when popping up on film. But he can be, I think you said it perfectly, this ball of clay that you can continue to mold. This is not the final form of Nicky Minwori. And when you have a player like that, who again is still young, he will be with you. I mean, again, paying big money to two at a certain position, at safety, that can be a little difficult, but I think that's something that you would have to, I mean, you would have to do, because I think by the time we're talking about Minwori 4 or 5 years from now, he's going to be established as one of the best safeties in the league. And I hope that will be in Baltimore next to one of the other great safeties in this league. I know it's not, you know, the skill position that they like, you know, you could argue that, oh, maybe they should take a D lineman or an edge or a corner or whatnot. I, you know, with Minwori, you take him over. I mean, he to me is a top 15 player in this class. And I think that a team will take him before the Ravens get to 27, like I said. But if he starts slipping for some reason, I don't know what that reason would be, but if he starts slipping for some reason and he gets up to like that 18, 19, 20 range, I think you make a move to get him.
Okay. So I think 20 is going to be more in assets than the Ravens can give up to get him. But here's the trade proposal. I think this one is probably a slam dunk anyway, but let's go through it. Bill Barnwell suggested this. So he said, make a deal with the Chargers. The Ravens trade number 27 and number 136, a first fourth round pick, in exchange for pick number 22. So they move up five spots. So, and they throw in Mark Andrews as well, and the Chargers throw in Zion Johnson. So both get a player with 1 year left under contract. Zion Johnson, a former number one who hasn't really worked out too well at guard, but still has pulling characteristics at left guard. And then you give away Mark Andrews. You obviously have an expanded role for Isaiah Likely. You set yourself up to draft a tight end later in the draft. A lot of positive things could happen. And the scenario I see that really working for, the way I really love that trade, is if Minwori has slipped past 21. And you have a chance to trade with the Chargers at that exact moment. And I think the Chargers might say, we've got Derwin James. We can't take another safety like that. So it really could be a point where that trade would happen. So I'm probably dreaming to think Minwori is going to make it all the way to 22 period. But if he did, are you giving up that package?
I'd be fine with it for Minwori. And there are specific players I wouldn't be okay with. I think it has to be for a player of Minwori's caliber or if someone falls. I mean, obviously, people talk about just other positions. Like, if you're sold on Tyler Booker and Tyler Booker falls because of the combine he had, is that a player you'd be willing to move up for? Or like any of those guys that are like, are they going to fall because of certain things? I don't know why Minwori would fall. I can't think of a reason. Do you have one?
No, but I've got one other player I would do it for in terms of a guy who'd fall to 22, and that's Jade Brown. I would do it for him. Mm-hmm. Outstanding corner, might be the number one corner in this class. Exactly fits another Ravens need. In some ways, it's more of a high value position that you want to fill with a draft pick. Minwori, I mean, it's almost like an embarrassment of riches for the Ravens to have two safeties like that at the same time. It's potentially the greatest safety tandem of all time. If you put those two guys together on the back end, I mean, it's absurdly, powerful defense. You add Roquan to that, you know, what the Ravens can give you, show you on the defensive line and Humphrey. I mean, it sent chills up my spine to think about them getting him, but I would also take Jade Barron. I think he'd be another guy I would make the 27 to 22 change for. And I do think the Ravens get a little bit from Zion Johnson, that they get depth that they need, and they get a left guard who can actually move, which the Ravens don't have. They have a lot of guys, and there are a lot of guys in this class who fit the hulking right guard or tackle who has to move to guard because they don't have very good feet, but really wouldn't, they're too big to be good pullers. A lot of them, I kind of calm myself down. I could say the Ravens can make those guys into good pullers. because they have with Hurst and with Bozeman and non-athletes in the past. But I think it's suboptimal. Zion Johnson is very mobile, good pulling guard. Wouldn't be a problem. Adapts fine to that. And you got your left guard spot filled for this year anyway.
Yeah, I don't think you're expecting too much, but he fits certainly kind of what you need at that spot. And you at least he brings in competition and depth. I think that's at least what you get with maybe the potential for more. But again, it's like you shouldn't give up Mark Andrews just to give up Mark Andrews, especially now with the roster bonus being guaranteed. That's an extra $4 million you're going to be on the hook with either way. But again, if the player is right, if it's like when Kyle Hamilton was falling, when he reached like 10, I was like, okay, go up there, try to make a move. They got lucky. He fell to him at 14. But like, even Warrior, if he falls to 22, and you know, to your point about the Chargers, you know, there are certain teams that have the safety. And this is why we talked about it. We talked about it at the very beginning of the first part of the safety breakdown. The Ravens have given themselves draft freedom with how they one have approached free agency and two have not lost a lot of guys, where they can pick a safety in him and where they can truly go BPA, obviously within reason, but they can go BPA. Was for a team like the Chargers, do they take a Loveland? Like, do they need a tight end badly enough to where they would pass on an Eamon Worry because they didn't get Andrews? So will they say, okay, we're going to get Andrews, trade back a couple of picks? Yeah, there's a potential generational talent on the board, but teams just don't operate like the Ravens do a lot of the time, where they want to fit more for need instead of BPA, figure out the rest later. So I think that with the Ravens, the way they have approached free agency and the way that they really didn't lose anybody that I'm losing sleep over, like a Stevens, McCary, et cetera, they can afford to take BPA much like they have and not have it be this, oh, well, where does this guy fit? They really needed X, Y, or Z. They have needs, but I think that you can take a guy within those needs and still have it be okay. So if it is a safety, a D lineman, edge, corner, even an offensive lineman, if you want to go down that route, although I know with Ronnie Stanley being back is not as important, taking Eamon Worry is not this like, oh, they already have Hamilton, why would you do that? Eamon Worry and Hamilton can coexist together. I think that that's something that some people don't believe. I truly do believe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Force multiplier to have them both on the field at the same time. It'd be outstanding. All right. Fantastic talking through this. Thanks for indulging me on the hypothetical there. Let's see. Any other guys that we did talk about some players who were already in the honorable mention category? Because I think in some ways I have one I didn't mention for my honorable mention category and then two guys I distinctly do not want. You got any honorable mentions left? Let's start with you.
I had a couple of because I did 16 guys. So I had just other guys up and stout, Keaton Crawford, Hunter Wohler, and then I don't think I wrote down my 16th guy. I had RJ Mickens as my 16th guy. So
okay, Upton Stout is my number 13 guy.
Okay,
so it sounds like we both had him on the thing. What did you like about Stout? Just maybe one sentence here, and I'll toss it in as well.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the size is definitely a concern, being 5'9", but I think that he brings a lot of intangibles to the table, especially the fact that he is a processor and the versatility is good. I mean, he's someone that does bring pop. It kind of reminds me of our Darius Washington with some of the pop he brings due to his size. And I think that he can blitz from the slot. So I think that him, I think he profiles more as a nickel at the next level, but I think that's where the Ravens could use him.
Yeah. Again, 5'8", 191 guy. I think he's a free safety for the Ravens, a split field guy there. And I think he can do some good things for you. Unfortunately, he's kind of been the reverse in college because he had 9.6 yards per target allowed in his senior year, career 8.0 and a 78.9 passer rating. Might be a reason for his last year being not so great at Western Kentucky,
that he'd be a
player who would fall in the draft. They could get in the sixth, seventh round, even as a priority UDFA possibly. But his stops to missed tackle ratio is fantastic. 26-5 last year. Career, it's 58-20, which is almost 3-1. That 10% missed tackle rate that's okay for a safety. That's kind of the 260 batting average line, I'll call it, for a safety. So it's something that you can really appreciate. So he was number 13 on my list. I had two guys I really don't want the Ravens to draft, and they're Akili Arnold of USC. Now, again, no problem if they get this guy as a UDFA. If he shows up in camp, I had Bo Braid on this list last year as a guy I didn't want as a draft pick, and he still showed up as UDFA, and that's fine. Akili Arnold, tiny hands, terrible stops to missed tackle ratio last year of 10-13, barely 48-46, barely 1-1 career, gave up 9.8 yards per target last year and 122.8 opposition passer rating. He's on a lot of people's safety list, just does not make sense to me. He's had a lot of coverage snaps, 2,406 total, 1,380 in coverage, and four interceptions and seven other passes defense, which is not a particularly high ball skills number for that many. So anyway, Achille Arnold was a guy, and also Jalen Reed of Penn State. You get a lot of time, not necessarily watching them together because Winston was hurt this last year,
right,
but a lot of Jalen Reed playing Winston's position, and it doesn't look that good to me. So he's a no. And again, if he shows up as a UDFA, no problem. He's certainly got the speed, but stops to miss tackles are not good, and his passing, his coverage metrics were not good either. So he was a strong safety who's forced into a free safety role was my problem with that.
Yeah, I didn't have either of them on my list. I mean, I think for Achille Arnold, he doesn't play up to his size in contested catch situations a lot of the time is what I noticed. And he's not like the biggest safety in the world, but I think he gets himself into trouble in those spots. And then I know that for Jalen Reed, a lot of people have him decently high on their draft, like anywhere from a fifth to a sixth. I've even seen late fourth for him. I didn't have him on my list either. I mean, he's not really a guy that has elite range. And when I was watching again, he was also someone that didn't really pop off the screen in terms of block shedding. He gets stuck on blocks, and someone that, again, is more of a developmental guy at this point. I don't think he's very ready for the league right now, which, again, if that's an undrafted route for him, I'm with you. That's fine if he comes in that way. But in terms of a draft pick, maybe a seventh, but I'm not, you know, I'm not super keen on him.
Yeah, I'm almost treat a seventh like a UDFA, but you do get to lock that player down without UDFA dollars, which is important, right, with a seven. So if you have a priority UDFA guy you think is really going to cost you some money, go ahead and draft him in the seventh round. It's not a terrible situation. You'll end up, if he ends up playing a significant role for you, he'll get an escalator that will make his fourth year salary higher, as we've had happen with players like Bradley Bozeman, earned, you know, additional value there. So he can still make some money. He doesn't have to be a restricted free agent in order to make money. So the point is, he won't necessarily be unhappy with the fourth year player next to him making approximately the same amount of money as he does.
Yeah.
All right, Kevin, absolute pleasure talking over the safety class with you. And I think we did a pretty thorough job here over about 2 hours. Tell folks where they can find your work online and follow you.
Yeah, you can find me. I do the Locked On Ravens podcast. We're a daily Ravens podcast. So we do Monday through Friday, every single weekday. And we also sometimes have bonus episodes on the weekend. We go live after every Ravens game, after every piece of Ravens big news. You can find us over in video form on YouTube if you are a watcher, or if you are a listener, just want to listen to the audio version. We're available wherever you get your podcasts. Also, you can find me working on the Ryan Ripken Show, talking Ravens, Orioles, sports over there. I write for the Ravens Wire, so you can find my written work over at USA Today. You can find me on social media at Chaos Striker 34, both on Twitter/X and Instagram, and do some work over at Bleacher Report as well. So that's where you can find me.
All right, Kevin Ostreicher showing up everywhere. Folks out there, I know there's a lot of people who listen to the pod only, and there seems to be a fairly sharp division between people who really are into the articles, in particular the offensive line scoring, but also the stuff on the defense too. Very technical. It's a quicker read than the listen is here. And sometimes it may be a matter of choice of you know, whether you're in the car and you need somebody else to read it for you, like an audiobook, or you want to read it in a quicker form at your own pace in terms of the offensive line scoring. But we encourage you to check out the website, look at both when you have the chance. The podcast is, you know, my bread and butter. It's what we really love to produce. It's produced either 6 or 7 days per week, generally speaking. Last year, we produced about 350 pods for the year. So really appreciate all the people who are very loyal to the show and have done that. Please join us on draft night. Kevin Ostreich will be there on day two, we believe. Correct, Kevin?
Yep. Day two.
And it'll be a lot of fun. And this is a year where you really want to be there on day three. It's felt like we've been hanging on day three, sometimes waiting for one or two more Ravens picks, even though they have a good number of compensatories year after year. But they've got 8 picks on day three this late year. It's going to be a very fun and busy day three of taking names off and trying to decide who's the next good pick for the Ravens. The format is something we hope you'll love, because it's done on a kind of a group spreadsheet format that we can all make our selections kind of ahead of time and order selections among both the panelists and people who are watching the stream. Anyway, really appreciate you folks. Kevin, appreciate you also for coming on.
Yeah, always appreciate you. And thanks so much for having me. It was a blast.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. All right.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
News just in. Bet365 is now live in Illinois.
That's right. Join Bet365 today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet $5, win or lose.
That's amazing.
That's for sure. With Bet365, you can bet on the spread, totals, and money line.
Well, there you have it, Illinois. Download the Bet365 app and get your $150 in bonus bets today.
And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Illinois. T's and C's apply.